Hello there and welcome to Storm Boy Speaks. On today's show, we're looking at the concept of war and all that it entails. Now, if we look at war as a concept, first of all, we have to take on board that pretty much it is one of the mainstays of human society. There's one thing we can look at across time on this planet. It is the prevalence, certainly since supposed civilized man, that war has always existed. We might want to ask ourselves why that is, during only civilized times, by the way. Well, first of all, I'm going to make some statements and then we're going to discuss those. Know this then. First of all, war, above and beyond all things, is a mass blood sacrifice. It is performed on specific dates for specific ritual purposes by those in great power, initially by those who ruled as god kings on the earth, as we know, a long time ago in the times of the Sumerians. And if we look at the likes of the, for instance, in the Second World War, for instance, to use an example, you had D-Day was on the 6th of the 6th, that's correct. And a lot of these beginning of certain wars and dates of this sort are on specific dates, just like 9/11, okay? Those are very specific dates, not just referencing the emergency number in America. That's not a war, but it was a blood sacrifice, make no mistake. They're for a reason, always, and those numbers are highly significant. Those rituals are used in order to create a connection to, as we've discussed before, lower vibrational beings. You can think of them as demons, if you like, whatever that means. These are just words that they give you, but probably not the way that people imagine. And the idea of demons is they just take the form of what you expect them to take. They don't have a form. If you expect a demon to look like a horned beast, then it will. It's just an energy field, nothing more. Okay, especially if it is an egregore. An egregore, as we've talked about before, is an energy field created by humanity themselves. It doesn't exist in and of itself, but humanity's energy, let's say in this case, one of fear over hundreds of years, propagated around a specific name, let's say like the devil, produces an energy field which responds to those things. It doesn't exist in and of itself as a being. It is an energy state, nothing more. So, however, these energy states connected and do connect to those in power, and particularly back in the day, those beings, as we like to discuss, the Anunnaki, gods, for want of a better word, these rulers knew how to use these energies for dark purposes. That's not all they did. They didn't just do dark, negative things, but they certainly did that, some of them at least. So let's think of it in connection to that. And how do I also know that? Well, if you look at the book Magic by Aleister Crowley, obviously well known, people think of him as a Satanist. He wasn't a Satanist, and Crowley knew the devil didn't exist, okay? But he did know who Lucifer was, as we discussed before in our beginning series and all the rest of it. And he used these ideas of the ancient extraterrestrial gods, if you like, for his own ends of control. So we can think of Crowley as being a very evil man, which undoubtedly he was, but really it's just that he was very controlling. Now, in the book Magic, which I happen to own, probably unfortunately I should probably burn it, but nonetheless, I picked it up in a bookstore many years ago. And in it, I couldn't believe some of the things that I read blatantly stated. And you've got to remember this was written before World War I, which is pretty interesting, just before the start of World War I. And in it, he says, we need a substantial sacrifice to bring about connections to some of these deities that we're trying to invoke, some of these beings we're trying to invoke. What he didn't know is that those are egregores and the states of those. They're not the actual beings. But anyway, so he talks about this and he says quite directly, the best kind of sacrifice we can make is one of a young child, usually, you know, like an innocent young boy, for instance, which is an unbelievable direct statement, you know, in this open book, which is it's not the most hidden book in the world. You can get it on Amazon, undoubtedly. So he states this, and then he says, but at this time we need a big action. We need to connect to huge spiritual energies on such a level that what is needed is a mass blood sacrifice of the levels which would be helped by a world war. And who knew, but just a number of months after this book was written, for instance, World War I begins. And when we put this into context, we realize that, interestingly, Crowley was directly connected to the lineage, I think the great-grandmother or something like this, or the grandmother of George W. Bush, right? So he's connected to her, and there are actually suggestions that he may have had a child with her, and therefore the lineage of the Bushes may include Crowley, which says quite a lot, and I wouldn't in any way doubt it. Aleister Crowley is also well known to have worked for the British Secret Agents Services, MI6. He's well known to have worked for them, and to be a fellow of St. John's, I think it is, Cambridge, a very, very high-level scholar from Cambridge. So no fool, but certainly not a pleasant man. Anyway, so this idea of war from here was suggested by him straight away as a way to create massive sacrifice to bring about the use of egregores, to bring about an energy state to control people and the populace, and basically put the powerful people in more power and do the work of these demonic entities, if you want to think of it that way. So on top of this, you've got to think, okay, what's the biggest other powerful bringer of war? Well, it's money. Because war creates money more than anything else. Because the governments during any war go to, in let's say in Britain, the Bank of England, in America, the Fed, the Federal Reserve. They ask for more money, and the banks print up more money. They print it up. We'll talk about this at a later date, about how money is just basically a made-up concept and doesn't even exist. Most of it's not worth the paper it's printed on, and that's the way in which it's done is genius. But nonetheless, so they'll print up more paper money, which theoretically is worth things. Of course, in reality, it isn't. But and they'll put this out, and so they make more money. Now, that money doesn't go to the people, though, of course, does it? It goes to the government. And as I've always suggested, a large amount of it these days goes to black ops projects. Then it would have gone to the revenue of occultist practice, which they would have been using pre-World War One or World War One. In certain esoteric endeavors that they had, right? On top of this, you make huge amounts of money, even more so, from things like funerals, where the people in the wars die. And of course, you charge high prices for funerals. So always, again, what you're getting is the equivalent of this taxation going into the government, so they get even more money out of it. And that money can be used, as I say, for their specific desires and needs, not just to fuel and fund the country and help the country. And on top of this, you have, of course, the fact that people are encouraged during the war to support the war effort. In other words, work for less money. Really work hard. Look at the people who are the likes of my grandmother and my grandparents during the war, and the fact they were encouraged to work hard in factories, all the more, you know, pull together. And this great spirit that's driven into humanity is interesting for all the wrong reasons. So instead of using that power which they could pull together to do and fight against the powers that be, they're working for the powers that be. Genius, right? But there it is, and this is the history of warfare. So that it seems as though people are doing brave things, and they are doing brave things. Unfortunately, they're doing them for people who are playing them like dancing puppets, because they don't know any better, and they've been played like this for over 11,000 years. So what you see here is, as I say, people will work for this idea of the war effort very cheaply. They'll work really hard. They won't make as much, and they'll all say to each other, "Oh, mustn't grumble because, you know, we've got to fight Hitler," for instance, in one example there. And that makes sense because he's a very obvious target, right? Now, what they didn't know is, of course, that, for instance, the royal family are Germans and are directly related to all the connections of those and weren't harmed in any way by the war. You might notice this with the way the bombs didn't really affect them. Funny that. Didn't really affect the West End too much either, if you go to London. Interesting. And you think, well, okay, how do they get away with that? Well, again, they just encourage it through propaganda. They put it out, must pull together. Oh, there's this evil, this evil kind of ruler in the case of Hitler, let's say. It's obvious with him. It's very easy to use against someone because obviously the guy was crazy. But nonetheless, what they didn't realize that they were working for basically the same teams all the time. It's just that some of them are better actors than others, put it that way. And that's always the nature with war. It dials into the Machiavellian construct of funding both sides. Divide and conquer, as always. What the powers that be do and is they fund both sides. And how do I know this? Well, in World War II, for instance, again, our friend George W. Bush, or George Bush Sr., even worse, of course, the Bush family, basically. George W. Bush is one of his, I think it was his grandfather. He worked for IG Farben. And IG Farben funded, for instance, things like the Messerschmitts and all, in other words, the big war effort, factory production in Germany. They funded them. They funded them directly. It's well known. You can Google this and find it out. So immediately you see, it's like, what? That's right. So a guy who is now, who was, you know, the president of the United States, his family funded the war effort from the other side. That's correct, to make it really clear for you. That's the way things work. They always do it that way because the people in power are just pulling strings, making money. They're making blood sacrifice, they're making huge amounts of money, and they're also decreasing the population and keeping them busy, working harder than ever, doing all the things they normally do because, you know, you've got to keep the country running, right? Doing it cheaper, they don't pay them as much because, oh, it's the war effort, you know, mustn't grumble. Pay them less, harder circumstances, they can skim off all the more taxation-type money, which they use, as I say, for black ops or their own occult, you know, practices, whatever they want to use it for. The people continue harder than ever during this time. Genius, right? Meanwhile, as I say, they're pulling all the strings. And on top of that, brilliantly, of course, they're reducing the population, as I say, which means less costs for them. They save even more money for their coffers and control. Beautiful amounts of blood sacrifice, thousands going on. Especially useful on specific dates, as I say, because then they can do their ritual practices. And they repeat this over and over and over again. How do we know that? Because we look across the world, and from day to day now, whether we're talking about a so-called war in Gaza, for instance, not a war, it's just a sacrifice, but nonetheless, or anywhere else, this is a constant theme. It is played forever. It is money making. War makes money and it makes blood sacrifice. And the biggest things, these are the biggest two players. And it makes control. And it makes people in power more powerful, which is why it's just been the tool they've played forever. And as I say, people play this like dancing pawns, like it's, you know, it's okay. One of the explanations they use to validate this to the masses as well, let's think about this, is they like to say, and this is where, you know, we get back to the churches and their horrific ways, is one of the things they like to use is this idea of you've made the ultimate sacrifice. Oh, he made the ultimate sacrifice. Yeah, he sacrificed his life, that's right. And for what? Oh, did he do? Oh, he did it for freedom. He did it for this. The thing is, ironically, these people are trying to do it for freedom. If only they knew it's just a game going on behind that they're not involved in, and it's just it's already preordained. It's predecided. It's a game to these people at the highest level. It isn't anything you think it is. That's the horror, the real horror. And these people have sacrificed their lives, and these on mass. And the people in power couldn't care less. And people need to understand this. It's part of their. It's part of the way in which they're taught in the lower level. Think of it, as I've said before, in the lower level ideologies of the dark end of the mystery schools, like the Sith. Think of it that way, because it is like that. It's exactly like that. And they'll use this ideology, which they'll peddle to people, saying, you've made the ultimate sacrifice, but, you know, your body is nothing at the end of the day, is it? You know, it's only a spirit that matters. You know, that's all that Jesus would care about. It's just your spirit. Well, I hate to break it to you, but that's a sack of shit. And I don't mean to be rude, but the bottom line here is humanity have been conned by this forever. The reason that is nonsense is very simple. We are taught by the religious powers that be across the world, but specifically in the religions of things like Islam and Christianity and Judaism, all of the main religions in the West particularly, that, you know, it doesn't matter. You can sacrifice yourself in the war and whatever, you know, and this idea, done on purpose, of course, because if you think that what matters is, you know, so in Islam, it's like, oh, 42 virgins or this, whatever it is. You're encouraged for what happens afterwards. Well, I hate to break it to you, but the consciousness of all things, the field of all things, the oneness of all things, which is the creator source that people mistakenly have called God, that field is in and of absolutely everything in existence. And it is equally dispelled in all things of existence. And what do I mean by that? I mean that everything in existence on every dimensional level is of equal validity. That's correct. Of equal validity. Good, bad, doesn't make any difference. Because without one, there is not the other. It's a very difficult cookie to swallow because, of course, it means we have to accept the very, very horrific things that exist in our world and universe. And we do. It doesn't mean, however, that we have to allow them to continually disbalance the world as it is at the moment, because everything's out of balance. But they do have their place. As I say, without darkness, there's no light. We need to remember that as a concept. In the same way, your physicality, the body you wear, and yes, of course, you're wearing a body, you die and your spirit continues. That's true. That is absolutely correct and provably the case with out-of-body experience and literally through the mystery schools of the experience of resurrection, living resurrection we've discussed, where you pass out of the body and have a out-of-body experience and know that there is no death. That's right, there isn't. And yet, your body being this kind of vehicle during this specific element of your existence is as valid as anything else, and it brings you experience, and it is part of the creator. What happens to it when you die is it becomes part of the earth again, doesn't it? You know, dust to dust, exactly that. But that's not you, it's part of you though. And so part of you that is connected to that element becomes part of the earth again. The earth is the creator source on a different level. It is a living being. The earth itself is a living being. And so part of you changes into that, and the spiritual part of you goes back to another more higher vibratory level. And again, whatever happens from there happens from there. But my point is, both are equally valid. So this con you've been told is on purpose so that you think, oh, I don't value my body. It's okay if I die. It's okay if I sacrifice my body to, you know, for a greater power. I'm doing it for God or for, you know, the creator source. No. You see, any creator source doesn't care about that at all, has no agenda, no agenda whatsoever. You do as you choose, and it simply will bring back to you, as I've said before, in a karmic way, you get what you give. And so that is the law you should be thinking of. Karma is the only law. It is the one and only law. You get whatever you give. Simple as. And so as that happens, instead of you thinking, oh, well, you know, actually, my body is as valid as anything else, and why should I, you know, sacrifice this for something by destroying other bodies for you because you want me to? Really, you think? But that's going to somehow score points with my creator. No, no, it isn't. I'm afraid not. It doesn't work that way. Wake up. But you've been conned into that. Of course, everybody's been conned into that as an idea, all right? And I understand it. I really, really do. It's just very sad that we've all fallen for that. And one of the things along that that we have to remember also is this playing again and again and again, like I said earlier, is it's a, you know, live, die, repeat, to quote the Tom Cruise film, but that's correct. And that's what they want you on, that cycle of lives. The idea is you wake up, you go, oh no, I was supposed to come into this life to do something of a higher purpose, to do something, to wake people up, right, to their incredible validity, their incredible power. And instead, you get here, and then just as you're starting to remember as a child, it's washed out of you through an education system that makes no sense. And people who are so completely and utterly blinded by the society they live in, that they are literally just, you know, they pester you with the same information you've heard 1,000 times, repeat and rinse, rinse and repeat, you know, same old nonsense. And of course, you go nowhere fast, you die again, same thing happens. Okay, which is what Buddha was talking about, and he's talking about breaking the cycle of lives with the idea of nirvana. Well, yeah, to break the cycle of lives, you first have to become aware of the cycle of lives. So you have to realize that from every lifetime, especially everybody that's on this earth now, undoubtedly, has very probably gone through many lifetimes, and in those lifetimes has probably experienced some horrific trauma or other. Certainly if they've been involved in wars, and of course many have. Now, if you think about the emotional trauma caused by war, and caused therefore by the idea of human worthlessness, which, make no mistake, has been peddled by these beings because they also know that you can't die, if you like, in the spirit. So they know you come back in, and every time they catch you again, they catch you again, they use you for what you're worth. They catch this idea, they create this human worthlessness, and it is cycled again and again after lifetime, so it becomes more difficult to break the cycle until you've just had enough, and then you start to wake up, right? And this is a fact. And the more that human beings start to realize this, and this is happening now around about this time because, you know, there are great changes happening on the planet, as I've said before. So at this time, they're very, very worried because people are starting to wake up and realize this realization of our spiritual truth. And that they've been conned for all time, doing basically, if you want to think of it that way, if there's anybody that's the devil, it's these beings, doing the devil's work for them, as it were. Think of it that way. What's very interesting about this is that this whole idea of human worthlessness and sacrifice has been even more to reconnect to our sessions on Jesus. The idea, of course, of Jesus and sacrificing himself on the cross, which, as I've discussed, seems to be an absolute myth on every level, done so that people think it's a valid thing if this great man, you know, sacrificed himself for humanity. Why would he be sacrificing himself for humanity? Where did that come from? Dying on the cross, how was that for humanity? That was actually made up by, I think it's Emperor Constantine. It was made up as a concept. It was never in any ideology before that. And he made it up as this idea that somehow Jesus had sacrificed his life. It was okay then for humans after that to, you know, sin because he'd taken that pain on him. Well, that's nonsense, total and utter rubbish. Everybody's responsible for whatever they do in any life, in every life. So taking a life, first of all, Jesus didn't die on the cross. He certainly didn't die for your or anybody else's sins, whatever sins might be. And again, another made-up concept. You do good, you do bad, you do many things. The key is to be balanced through lifetime. He certainly didn't, as I say, die for your sins. I guarantee you that. So this mistaken concept that has been given to Christians, in fact, I think it was Martin Luther, not Constantine, Martin Luther during the Reformation of the churches, during the first start of Protestantism, who came up with that concept, I think you'll find. And, you know, he came up with this idea, it's okay, yeah, you know, Jesus took your sins for you. Well, as I say, think about that as a concept. Why would a man dying on a cross, you know, a spiritual leader or anything, how would that in any way equate to him dying for your sins? It just doesn't make any sense, does it, really? It's like, yeah, okay, the Romans what whipped him and then crucified him, and then somehow that's got something to do with your sins. No, it has no connection. What are you talking about? No, he came to teach you things, and he did, and they were beautiful things. And let's face it, as I say, it was probably Simon of Cyrene who died on the cross anyway. And we know the resurrection myth is totally to do with the mystery school initiation concept of spending 3 days in a darkened place and having an out-of-body experience. So there we are. Nothing to do with any of the other stuff, right? Again. But they've used this concept along with the idea that, as I say, when people take communion, a big one, of the idea of sacrifice and blood, again, the energy in blood, which they use to connect to dark energies, is used in the horrific idea. And think about this, everybody misses this like you wouldn't believe, and it's the most horrific thing you can imagine. People go to church or whatever the hell they do, I've never done it, I never would. They take bread and wine. Oh, it's the body of Jesus, the blood of Jesus. Is it? Why do I want to be drinking the blood of a man I love and respect more than any other? Why would I do that? What the hell are you talking about? And why would I want to eat his body, you crazy sickos? Think about what's being said here. Nobody even bats an eyelid like it's just normal. Oh, yeah, let's eat his body, let's drink his blood. Whoa, what are you saying there? No, what you're talking about is blood sacrifice. You are talking about the equivalent blood sacrifice that is involved during the taking of blood and the ingestion of adrenochrome drug, which gives you an out-of-body experience and has been used since time immemorial and is related to the ideology of things like vampires and myth, right? Because during doing that, you create, as I say, this very high-level hallucinogenic experience and connect to lower vibrational demonic energies. That's what it's used for. And you are basically doffing your cap to that every time you get a group of people in the church, or wherever it is that people do this, right, taking communion. Holy communion, there couldn't be anything less holy about it. It has no connection to Jesus. He did not have anything to do with that on any level, nor, I guarantee you, would he condone it. Right? It has no connection to anything that as ever. It is a reverence for the use of those powers that play the world and always have and are playing you like a puppet on a string, bouncing you up and down, saying, dance. Dance, puppets, dance. And you are, because you don't really understand what's happening. But when you take a step back, as I say, and you look at this process, you think, actually, that is a very weird thing, isn't it? Drinking his blood, eating his body, and even, you know, not pretending, but talking about it as if that's a thing. That's crazy. So let's have a real think about that and how that connects, as I say, to the trick of the gods, which is to validate sacrifice, to validate war, to validate negative connection to lower vibrational energies again and again and again, being played over and over again as the ultimate sacrifice in the name of the gods, using their name, as we know. You know, the Elohim, the gods, using their name, using their sacrifice principles, using a way to keep the population down, to destroy each other, to keep humanity under control, to keep them working for you, doing all the work you want, cheap and easy, whilst giving their blood and their lives for you. In every way, they have you under control, under the thumb, don't they? Think about it, so easy. And all they do is they keep playing it, as I said, over and over and over. It's almost like a joke. Like, they're like, well, they're not getting this, are they? Let's just keep doing it. Let's just keep doing it. Keeps working. Let's keep doing it. Rehash it, rehash it, rehash it. Like I say, it's like live, die, repeat. Have a think about that. I think it makes more than a little sense. Until next time, I wish you truth, freedom, and balance.